through the dead of night, seeking out broadcasting injustice wherever it appears. Only one man can wield it. Media Bat with Tim Bat, only on 95 BFM.
Kia ora, Tim. How are you?
Hey, good, thanks. How are you doing?
Oh, ka pai. We're doing pretty good in the studio here this morning. Had some hot cross buns, had some coffee. Yeah, it's a good morning.
Good vibes, caffeine and sugar.
It's all you
always
need.
A hit in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. What's happening in the world of media?
I want to kick off with something. I guess arguably this is a positive news story because I'm sick of talking about either A, boring stuff, or B, negative stuff all the time. So the online collective known as Anonymous, whatever that is, whoever that group contains, successfully have launched a few cyber attacks against Russia as part of the Ukrainian invasion response. Earlier this week, they managed to hack Russian state television and put images of the war on and play a bunch of pro-Ukrainian music.
Wow.
And so that the public of Russia, the people, can actually see a little bit of the reality, what's happening, and get a taste of the other side of the narrative. That same collective, Anonymous, has brought down government websites earlier last week, and they brought down Russia Today, which is the state-backed news service. That's just using DDoS attacks, which are pretty unsophisticated.
And right. Like,
if you put your mind to it, you can, you know, a lot of hacking groups can pull that off pretty easily. But it did bring down the websites for a while.
Nice.
And the news site as well. Yeah, it's been interesting seeing the kind of cyber war element of this, because there was a lot of huge concern in the lead up to sort of tensions escalating about the cyber dimension of this. But it's actually not. The visible part of it doesn't seem to have come to fruition so far.
What were people particularly concerned about?
There was a prediction that basically Russia's cyber arm of their military services would be able to launch a huge cyber attack on Ukraine. That doesn't seem to have borne out yet, at least visibly. It's always difficult talking about these things because we only know the stuff that's in the public, and a lot of these digital warfare elements can happen pretty invisibly, and then we either find out later or not at all in some cases. But it seems like the prediction of the sort of overwhelming cyber force that Russia would launch at Ukraine hasn't happened. Really the most significant digital element is Anonymous kicking around Russia a little bit and making some points that way. To more local news.
Yes.
Apparently, and this is, you know, very funny to sort of say out loud for the updates time, but apparently today is the day when we're going to get some concrete news on the RNZ TVNZ merger.
It's becoming a meme.
I think I've been doing this segment for like 2 years now, and it started. I remember the first thing I talked about was this, because it got announced
that it was
going to be happening imminently.
It's been around as long as Tame Impala playing Spark Arena has been around.
That gig is not going to happen.
Oh, it will. It'll get there.
Well, in the meanwhile, TVNZ's got a new CEO, Simon Power, who just started last week. And he said that understandably, the organisation is flying blind at the moment because they've just got a lack of news about what is happening.
But apparently,
a big announcement is happening today. About the merger. It's expected at this point to be going ahead. Let's see in a few hours what news comes out about that.
Totally. I mean, all I've really heard about it so far is people being like, it's coming today, and also probably certain things that we take to be like pillars of RNZ, like commercial free status, will be retained. Again, that's just what people have been like, I guess, educatedly speculating upon, but...
Totally. I mean, look, it's like, what's the point in speculating if apparently we're going to get some answers in a few hours? So if anyone cares to be following this story about the future of our large state news organisations, stay tuned. That's happening apparently later today. We'll get more details. Then again, they have also said that there's more details coming for the last 2 years. So
they really have, yeah.
I don't know who to trust anymore, Rachel.
What else is happening in the media, Tim?
Well, this kind of falls into the social media camp, but it was International Women's Day. Was it yesterday?
Maybe, yes.
I'm a little bit brain foggy. Oh, you should know, probably.
I think it was Tuesday. I think the 8th of March.
As an international woman.
Isn't it?
I have no idea.
You're straddling datelines and timelines and all sorts of things. Yeah. Well, look, there was a, how would you say, rare misstep from the All Blacks Twitter account on International Women's Day. I don't know if you two saw this, but I'll read what they wrote. God, verbatim. This was the tweet they put out on the official All Blacks Twitter account. Forever grateful to all the women in our lives that allow us to play the game we love. Partners, mothers, daughters, doctors, physios, referees, administrators and fans, appreciate you every day. Hashtag International Women's Day 2022. It was kind of widely blasted. Everyone on New Zealand Twitter had a chance to go to task and haul them over the coals for that one. It was almost universally described as completely tone deaf and really insulting, and especially sort of insulting because a lot of women play rugby.
Is that maybe a thing as well? I don't know.
Look,
like,
here's the thing. I only know this because I'm mates with Alice Soper, who's super passionate women and women's sport,
yeah,
and
she rules.
Particularly rugby. The women's game has been going from strength to strength in the last few years, and there are like huge awards, world tournaments that our women rugby players have been winning the last few years, and it just gets so little funding and coverage.
Totally.
And it has been discussed more, which is really good. And I apologise, I can't actually remember if it was the NZRU or the All Blacks, but one of those organisations like specifically committed to greater focus on the women's game this year. And so these sorts of things coming out against that context is just makes it, you know, all the worse taste in the mouth for people.
Yeah.
To add insult to injury, the players that they included in the post, because they had some photos there, was one who admitted to assaulting his partner and another who quite publicly cheated on his partner in an airport-disabled toilet. So, like, it was just... You kind of couldn't have done worse.
I mean, you say that, Tim. I've seen some terrible takes online in the last, like, 72 hours. I will not lie.
True.
But International Women's Day is a real interesting one, eh? Like, on the one hand, it exists for a useful reason. You get, I guess, a chance to highlight some of the incredible mahi that happens out there to help with the ongoing struggle for equality. You also get a chance to look at some of the extremely bleak statistics about things like pay inequity in Aotearoa, but also you get a chance for a lot of companies to come out and be like, we love women.
Hey, look at this woman.
Look at that woman. We love her. She's great. And then not do anything useful for the rest of the year. Maybe that's a very cynical take from me, but I don't know.
No,
I'm
I think
like, okay, call me when you do something. Like, that's cool.
Whenever we put a spotlight on an issue like this, it does allow organizations who don't have a real strategy to sort of take the mask off for a second. So it is kind of useful in that respect, at least.
Oh, God.
Got a couple other little bits.
Go on, then. What have you got?
So there's this video of Vladimir Putin online that's been doing the rounds the last few days that everyone thinks is fake, but it's not.
Oh, what's the video?
Well, it's him at a sort of a press conference, which is weird because I was trying to figure out when it was taken, because recently he's been doing these isolated appearances at huge tables, even with his government ministers. Everyone's saying that he's like terrified of getting COVID because he keeps appearing meters away from everyone else at these huge tables.
Right.
So I don't know when this video was taken, but it's been sort of published like in news outlets, and it's been widely circulated on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah.
The last little while, of Putin sort of putting his, it looks like he's putting his hand through a microphone while sitting next to someone, and
his hand going, through a microphone.
Yeah. That's what it looks like. So everyone's going like, it's fake, it's a green screen, it's CGI, Putin's dead, da da da. And this sort of mirrors almost identical situation that happened last year with US President Joe Biden when he did a stand up when they get out of the helicopter and do the address to media. And like, there's a crazy looking video where it looks like his hand sort of disconnects from the plane and goes in front of a microphone, but it doesn't make physical sense. So in both cases, there's other videos of those events and they're totally normal. And what is actually happening is it's basically an optical illusion that's being created with video compression.
Oh, true.
So with these videos, when they get uploaded, and especially if they get re-uploaded again and again, every time that happens, they get recompressed, especially on Twitter, because the whole thing with Twitter is the speed. So they try to get big files like videos and shrink them down so that people can view them quickly on their devices.
Yeah.
And when you do that, the computer is using a lot of digital tricks to make that happen, to make that shrink happen. And it introduces a lot of visual artifacts. And every now and then, those visual artifacts kind of look like magic tricks. Like it's kind of just random chance. But if you get them happening in a particular way, you get these weird optical phenomena happening. And that just randomly is what happened in this Putin video, because I've seen other cleaner video of the same event and it's totally normal and fine. I bring this up just because it's another example of showing that old adage. I think there's a Mark Twain quote, I'll probably butcher, but like, you know, a lie gets around the world before the truth has the chance to get its shoes on.
Yeah, whatever exactly. It is. Yeah, yeah.
Everyone just sort of, and also I think we've been trained always to sort of trust video, you know, like we'll hear accounts of stuff, but if you can actually see it with your own eyes and it looks messed up, it's like, whoa, well, I'm going to trust that. Unfortunately now we can't really place a huge amount of faith in video either, both because in this case, you know, sometimes accidentally stuff looks messed up.
Totally.
And then there's also obviously ways to manipulate video now that's increasingly easy to make you believe something's happening that it's not. So this is sort of adding to this whole kind of mistrust in what we see and what we read, which is the final issue that I wanted to talk about that sort of segues into this.
Nice little segue.
Thank you. To bring it back to God's own Aotearoa, a lot of organisations recently have been receiving questions about mistrust in media, New Zealand On Air, for example, and the New Zealand Herald actually took questions from readers about this issue, about mistrust in news, mistrust in media. The New Zealand Herald gave paid-up subscribers to the Herald, which I thought was kind of ironic, a chance to do a Q&A with three New Zealand Herald editors, basically the top brass, the guy who's the managing editor of NZME, the parent company, the editor of New Zealand Herald, and the editor of the premium wing of New Zealand Herald. And I read all of the questions that they accepted and answered. It was like a written down Q&A thing. About half of them were about the Public Interest Journalism Fund, which is this $55 million pool of money that the government opened up of contestable funding for news organisations to be able to apply to and receive for public interest journalism. And off the kind of rising wave of people mistrusting news and media, it has been that specific fund has become a real flashpoint in New Zealand for people believing that the government is basically buying news organisations and buying opinion and buying positive slant, pro-government slants in the media.
Yeah.
And like, it was a kind of interesting that the Herald only opened this up to subscribers of the publication, which I would have thought would have produced a way less rigorous questioning of their publication, but people were still pretty like pissed off and had super pointed questions, and a lot of them
for the
editors. I thought that it was like an exercise in futility a little bit as well, because the editors were giving these sort of two sentences to three sentences answers to most of these very big questions around mistrust in media. Yeah. I just don't know how they expected to change any hearts and minds through this activity.
It's a tricky one, because you can understand people wanting to engage in what is like meaningful discourse about the whole thing.
Totally.
But also, how do you actually make that happen at the moment, especially when there is a lot of like fraughtness? Maybe we need to take it outside of, you know, interested party spaces so that people can feel like there's less maybe tension in the room when these conversations are happening. I don't know. Maybe that's not a helpful way of looking at it.
It's a super hard thing to crack from a lot of angles. I mean, with this specific activity, they essentially just ran Twitter like it was a written down, you know, still anonymous questions being asked by people.
Yep.
Their identity was hidden. Pretty limited format. Like it was essentially Twitter. They were just running a private version of a Twitter Q&A, but with people who were already paid subscribers to the publication. And because of the volume of questions that these three editors were answering, they didn't have a chance to sort of expound or get into any depth about the big questions
about
this.
Yeah, yeah.
if you start to do a thing where you want to have like a hosted panel and delve deeper into these questions, then you get questions around gatekeeping, and it's like, yeah, oh, well, they sort of organize this whole thing to only receive certain questions. So it is it like earning trust is so hard to do, and
it's
destroying
fraught.
Trust
yeah.
is
yeah.
so easy.
Sure.
And
yeah.
I actually,
so,
I did want to check
so
if this,
easy.
There's sort of this mantra at the moment that, you know, mistrust in media has never been high. And I was like, wait a minute, is that actually true? Is that just something we say? And it turns out it is. I went back to an AUT research unit, did some local research based on 1,200 respondents last year. And trust in the New Zealand media overall, I don't know exactly how they measure this, but it fell from 53% in 2020 to 48% in 21. So it's below, you know, half of people actually
yeah.
have a broad trust in it. Trust in news sources is slightly higher, but it also decreased from 2020 to 2021. It was at 62%, and that's down to 55%. And RNZ and TVNZ are the most trusted news sources. But it does reflect, in a scientific measured way, that there is a trend in declining trust in media and in news,
well,
which is pretty freaky. We see the fruits of that, you know, the other week in Wellington.
We absolutely do. It's a big old one. I think we'd better come back to that one, actually, and talk a little bit about it next week, maybe, when we also hear about what's happening with RNZ-TVNZ merger. But thank you once again, Tim, for your wonderful knowledge on MediaBat. We'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, happy International Women's Day, you two, because in my books, it's every frickin' day.
Oh, thanks, Tim. You're the best. See ya.
I'm getting cancelled for that. See ya.
Come back next week for another exciting adventure on MediaBat, only on 95 BFM.